And now I would like to request His Holiness Srila Niranjan Swami Maharaj to kindly come forward and make his offering.
Om Gana Timirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Sakshu Unminitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Ukam Kuroti Vachalam Bangum Nangayati Garim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Shri Gurandina Taranam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shemate Bhakti Vidanta Saman Iti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Sanyavari Pastachade Satarane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. I didn't expect to be speaking this evening, but I should have expected it. Simply by coming here, I should have expected it. Knowing that Radhanath Maharaj would make such a request of me. I was thinking about if I was asked to speak about what I would speak about. Obviously, it should be connected to Srila Prabhupada and the significance of his manifest presence in this world and the significance that presence should have in the lives of his disciples, grand disciples, and followers for many generations to come. Certainly, that is what Srila Prabhupada wanted, and I'm sure many of the speakers who have spoken before me have emphasized what Srila Prabhupada's desires were and how much he impacted those desires into the hearts of his followers. Shesha Prabhu also just spoke about it, about the spirit of sacrifice, that spirit of sacrifice that Srila Prabhupada inculcated in the hearts of his followers, ready to do anything for Srila Prabhupada. In fact, not long ago, I was reading my godbrother Shyama Sundar's book, Chasing Rhinos with the Swami. When it first came out, somehow by Krishna's grace, it manifested itself to me in Moscow. And at my first opportunity, I read it. And then after reading it, I wrote a letter to Shyama Sundar Prabhu, expressing my gratitude for writing that book and really portraying so wonderfully how Srila Prabhupada inculcated that spirit of sacrifice in his followers. And you could really get a sense of that by reading his book. And I expressed my gratitude to him for giving me the opportunity to relive that experience by reading his book. And he wrote back a very kind letter to me, unworthy, but he was expressing his gratitude for what he said that all that I was doing for preaching in the former Soviet Union and how Prabhupada would have been pleased. And although I was grateful for his kind words, I wrote back another letter to him saying, Shyama Sundar Prabhu, in comparison to what you did for Srila Prabhupada in the early days, I'm simply chasing mosquitoes. And literally that's what I was doing at the place where I had written that email to him. I was in some retreat center outside the city of Dnipropetrovsk, and there's very big mosquitoes there. And mosquitoes are very insignificant in comparison to rhinoceroses. But that spirit of sacrifice was definitely very obvious And how to keep that spirit of sacrifice alive is something that's very important for myself and for all of us, for his disciples, grand disciples, and many generations to come. And I thought I would like to tell this evening a little story. I've been speaking about it recently, a story of my own experience of with Srila Prabhupada. Oftentimes, many devotees tell their stories and of their interactions with Prabhupada, their memories of how Prabhupada dealt with them in a very personal way. And they're very inspiring and very enlivening. But my situation is a little bit different. Although I did feel some interaction with him physically, I did not have the opportunity to sit at his lotus feet very often. A few places. I sat here in Mayapur in 1976. I was present during Prabhupada's lectures, and I didn't go on the morning walk, and I didn't get to sit in the room during his evening darshans, but that's a whole story in of itself. I won't go there. And in the United States, I also saw Srila Prabhupada a few times, and by his kindness, I was able to sit and to hear him speak, and even one time captured that glance that every devotee will testify. When it comes to you, it goes right through you. And that was also a very unforgettable experience. And I also did get the opportunity to, one time, in a very sneaky way, I was able to get some remnants of his prasad, some maha prasad. So these are all memorable moments for me. But I would like to relate something a little of a different flavor, because this experience that I had, I believe, is accessible to anyone. And because it's accessible to anyone, therefore I think it's relevant to everyone. And that is, oftentimes when people ask me the question, when did you first meet Srila Prabhupada? I always tell them that I met Srila Prabhupada in 1972 in a bookstore. And people sometimes may ask, well, what was he doing in the bookstore? And I said, he was sitting on a shelf. Of course, that's literally where Prabhupada was when I first met him. And although my first meeting with him was in this bookstore, this little story I always tell in this connection, which I think is also quite profound, that I went into the bookstore to purchase a book on yoga. I picked up Bhagavad Gita as it is, and I looked through the pictures, and I saw a picture of a yogi sitting in meditation, showing the soul going through different chakras. And I thought this looked like a very interesting book on yoga, and I ended up purchasing it and discovering it was something quite different than what I was thinking. But nonetheless, I was already captured. But it was about 20 years later, I found out, I can't remember exactly, it was maybe second. Well, it wasn't from the original person who did it, but I found out from the devotee who was with him that book was actually placed on the shelf by a godbrother of mine. He just walked into the bookstore and he just left it sitting there. And it wasn't part of the inventory. Of course, they charged me the price on the back of the book, but it wasn't part of the inventory, and somehow I picked it up and purchased it, and then read that book every evening when I got home from work. And of course, by the time I finished reading it, something took place in the heart. And although I tried to to forget it, I couldn't. And in due course of time, within a matter of some months, I found myself sitting in the Brahmachari ashram with a shaved head. And even sometimes people, during those early years, they accused art society of brainwashing people and using coercive techniques to attract people. And I always tell them, I never met anybody, I just got a book. And it was as a result of getting a book that I was drawn into the movement. So anyways, that's somehow connected with a story that I would like to tell. Because my first meeting, or should I say second meeting with Srila Prabhupada, was not until 1975. And in January, I believe it was, 1975. And I was already first and second initiated. And by the time I actually got to see Prabhupada personally. And I would like to tell a story in this connection, as I said, because I feel that, forgive me if it's a little bit about myself, but I'll try to put it in perspective by first emphasizing that one of the most fundamental principles I've learned from Srila Prabhupada in the course of my service to his lotus feet, and which I've really embraced in my life of something that's of substance and real importance to me, was that Srila Prabhupada, we saw in him that he was always conscious of who he was serving. That was so clear in everything that he did. He was very, very conscious, conscientious, very deliberate, and whatever we would see him do was perfect Krishna consciousness. And he would oftentimes write about his total helpless dependence on following the instructions of his spiritual master and himself feeling unqualified to render that service. If we look for evidence of that, we see it that he wrote about it on the Jaladutta when he first left India. In his diary, he wrote that he was leaving and he was very much fully dependent on the order of his spiritual master. He wasn't fully grasping all that was about to come to him, but he had firm faith. And then he also wrote about it in Markandeya Bhagavad Dharma, when he was sitting in Boston Harbor, writing his poem, saying how that he's simply a puppet in the hands of his spiritual master. He didn't know why he was brought there, however, he simply was praying to Krishna, simply make me dance, make you dance as you like. And he felt himself to be unqualified, but because he had firm faith in the order of his spiritual master, anything was possible. He wrote about it in his purports in Srimad Bhagavatam. We find evidence of this in many places in Srimad Bhagavatam, of the consciousness the disciple should have in executing the orders of the spiritual master, that he should feel himself unqualified. Although he is unqualified, he should be always conscious that whatever I do is because of the superior order that has been given to me. And if I have simply execute that order in full Krishna consciousness, then whatever result will come will be successful. The success was in the consciousness, and more emphasis was placed on that than even in the external result, although Srila Prabhupada definitely sometimes did push us for results as well, and even stated that the test was how many books are distributed, how many temples are being opened, how many devotees are being made. He did use that as a barometer for our success in preaching. But he also, in his books, emphasized that real success is the consciousness we have. in the execution of our service. And I oftentimes think about that also in reading his concluding words in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, when he finally completed Chaitanya Charitamrita in 1975. He wrote that, "I think my spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, is personally guiding me in my heart by his words." And he said, "Although I have no qualification for executing, I'm not a scholar, I have no qualification for performing this task that's been given to me, that I understand that because it was executed for his pleasure and it was his desire, therefore on that basis, I can know that he will be satisfied by this endeavor in presenting Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita to the world." We can go and pick out so many different references of this mood that Srila Prabhupada had. And for myself, as I said, I learned this from Srila Prabhupada in a very unique way. And this is the story. I don't know how much time I have to speak. Is it okay? I mean, if I speak a little bit, like maybe 15 minutes more or something like that. Yes? I don't want to make sure I'm taking anybody else's slot, because I came as a newcomer.
You have 15 minutes.
Yes?
You have 15 minutes.
15 minutes? That's okay? 10, 15 minutes. Okay. So, as I said, I had not seen Srila Prabhupada physically. I saw him in pages of Bhagavad Gita. I studied it and moved into the temple. And after some years of struggle, I finally got myself in a position where I was able to go out, although it was very difficult for me, and distribute his books. And of course, it was during those years that the spirit of sacrifice was really inculcated in the hearts of so many devotees, and the sacrifices that were made were difficult to describe. And I'm sure many devotees have read and heard stories from the devotees who were distributing Srila Prabhupada's books in the 70s that give evidence and testimony of the amount of time they spent distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. Even myself, sometimes we would go out for 10 hours, 12 hours a day on weekends. And even on, we once decided that Saturday was a very important day for book distribution. So all of us, we decided that we'll stay out until the wee hours of the morning. And then we even started fasting on Saturdays, distributing from early in the morning to 2 o'clock in the morning. And we would fast all day so that we wouldn't have to waste time eating and take time away from book distribution. And we were fanatics, I guess you can call it. But that's what Srila Prabhupada inculcated in the hearts of so many of his followers, that type of sacrifice. So I was already doing that even before I saw Srila Prabhupada. For the second time, first time, whichever way you want to look at it. And I remember it was in 1974 that we had purchased a new building in Boston. And it was a very prestigious building in a very prestigious place, Back Bay, Boston. And one of the devotees had shown Srila Prabhupada a picture of that building. And it was I'm not exactly sure, it was sometime in 1974, he showed Prabhupada a picture. And Prabhupada, when he saw the picture, he said, "Oh, very nice, I will come there next year." So, naturally, we took those words very seriously. In fact, just today, I was reading about Uddhava's visit to Vrindavan. and how he had to carry a message from Krishna to the residents in Vrindavan. He was told to give them assurance that soon I will come. And I can very much relate to that. Now, having read that this morning, I spent also this morning watching the final part of Srila Prabhupada's pastimes in Vrindavan and in England, and also when he returned Vrindavan. I was watching those videos this morning with commentaries by the devotees. Anyways, when we heard Srila Prabhupada said that he would come to Boston, naturally we were very excited because Prabhupada had not been in Boston since 1971. But I was out distributing books at that time, and I remember very distinctly receiving a phone call from our temple president, and he was asking me if I would come back to the temple, and because Prabhupada was planning to come to Boston, and he asked me if I would prepare Srila Prabhupada's rooms for him. The temple president knew that prior to coming to Krishna consciousness, I was a carpenter, and I was already, the building one we had originally purchased, myself and one other devotee, between the two of us, we actually did the renovations practically of the whole building. And the temple president was aware of that. And therefore he was telling me, please come back. And I was offering some resistance because by that time, I was already one of those fanatics who was saying, I think Prabhupada would want me to distribute his books. And I was challenging him. And so he said to me, why don't you come back to the temple and we'll talk about it. So I finally agreed, because I was out traveling at that time. I agreed to come back to the temple. And when I came to the temple, temple president received me. He brought me upstairs to the second floor, and he brought me into these two rooms and said to me, would you put your spiritual master in these two rooms? And I said, honestly, no. So then he said, what are you going to do about it? So at that point, I knew I was trapped. I was defeated, and the rooms required quite significant renovation, because those two particular rooms were adjoining a bathroom, and he wanted Prabhupada to stay in those rooms and not to be inconvenienced, so he could go directly to an ensuite bathroom. But there was no corridor leading to the bathroom. One of the things I had to do was renovate the corridor and fix up the bathroom. And I had to do a lot of work. Anyways, to describe all the work that I had to do, is there's some relevance to it, because it took me months to renovate those rooms. I had to strip the wood and bring back the old wood that was there, refinish it, make it very, very attractive, take everything off the walls, resand the floors, construct a corridor to the bathroom, renovate the bathroom. And during that time, it was also the time that Prabhupada had sent Ambarish Prabhu to Boston. And Ambarish was there at that time. And during that time, it just so happened the temple president asked Ambarish Prabhu if he would help to purchase some marble for a new altar. So not only was I find myself renovating Srila Prabhupada's quarters, but then now I was finding myself also taking part in renovating the altar for Radha Gopi Vallabha. And I spent a lot of time with that. And during that time, which is also a part of the story, but I'll make it short. During that time, the temple president told me that we have to go to New York. I was also one of the only devotees in the temple who had a driver's license, so he asked me if I would drive him to New York to pick up marble for the altar. So, of course, I agreed, and we drove to New York, and then just as we were getting, it was about a 5-hour drive, just as we were approaching New York, he asked me if I would drive to the airport, and I was saying, is that where the marble is? And he said, yes. And then gradually as we got closer to the airport, he kindly admitted and confessed, he said, actually, there's no marble. So I said, really, why are we going to the airport? And he said to me, because Prabhupada's coming today. And I had never seen Prabhupada physically. So I got my, I could tell some stories, but there's some wonderful stories that when I saw Prabhupada there at LaGuardia Airport, the press conference Prabhupada did there, it was comical. Prabhupada was quite heavy. It was that press conference when Prabhupada was really strong about the role of women. And he was being challenged by a woman journalist. And but anyways, that's another story. And so anyways, I got to see Srila Prabhupada at the LaGuardia Airport for the first time, and needless to say, it was breathtaking. I cried full dandavats, and having served him already, distributing his books for a couple of years and making the sacrifices that I was making, it was quite an emotional experience to see my spiritual master in this way for the first time. And then we drove to the New York temple, and during that time, Prabhupada was also driving on the road, and the devotees were all trying to get back to the temple before Srila Prabhupada, but they would all stop and bring the car up next to Prabhupada so that they could look in the window and see Prabhupada through the window. It was a little game we were playing, and the temple president told me, as soon as there's a space, I want you to slip in and get right next to the car so that I can see Prabhupada. And I did that, and of course I couldn't, I had to watch the road, but he got to see Prabhupada. And then we went and we greeted him in Henry Street at the temple, and that's where I got some remnants from Srila Prabhupada, some shock, after mischievously climbing onto the legs of some devotees to get there before it was gone. And then we had to go back to Boston because Prabhupada on his tour was going to, on that particular tour, he was going to come to Boston. It was several temples ahead that he was going to come. So finally, after months of work, I completed his quarters, and then it was just a question of waiting for Prabhupada to visit. And of course, naturally, I was thinking, you know, Prabhupada's coming. I did all this work, and surely I'll get to sit with Prabhupada in the room. I'm sure that, you know, my mind was conjuring up so many different ideas of how I would finally get that opportunity to be in the room with Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was in Canada. I think he was in Montreal, Toronto, then Montreal, and then his next stop was Boston. And then Prabhupada received, while he was in Canada, he received a telegram from India. And in the telegram, he was told that Indira Gandhi is ready to meet with Prabhupada. And when Prabhupada heard that, he was very, very eager. He wanted to have that meeting with Indira Gandhi because he wanted to ask her to help to get many of his disciples so that he could stay on a more permanent basis in India. So when Prabhupada got that telegram, I believe it was sent by Tejas Prabhu, he disclosed that to me later. When Prabhupada received that telegram, he decided to immediately go to India, and he never came to Boston. And he went straight to India. And I had just spent all of that work, you know, meditating, you know, on offering it to Srila Prabhupada, and I was very crestfallen, naturally, to say the least. And then, of course, I had hoped that maybe he would come the next year, but 1976 passed, and he never came to Boston either. So I learned what I felt was a very important lesson that Srila Prabhupada personally taught me by this experience, that many of us may think that we may work very hard, do something, and that it won't be complete unless we see that the person was there to accept it, and we can show them what we did, and we can feel the satisfaction of what we did and feel the reciprocation. And how was I supposed to think after spending months and months like that preparing his quarters? And Prabhupada, you could say, he was never there to accept it. But then I had to remember what Srila Prabhupada taught by his example. He taught by his example that the offering is in the consciousness, that the offering is how much we're conscious of who we're offering it to. Otherwise, what would have happened after those months of labor and Prabhupada never come and saw it? Was it wasted work? Not wasted work. There's no wasted work in Krishna consciousness. If we don't have Krishna consciousness, then obviously there will be consequences. But Srila Prabhupada taught by his own example. In his words on the Jaladuta, in his words in Boston Harbor, in his words in the purports of Srimad Bhagavatam, in his words in the concluding words of Chaitanya Charitamrita, that the successful offering for the spiritual master is in the consciousness in which it's rendered. And it's a very important instruction that I learned. I'm still struggling with it. It's not an easy lesson to learn. But he taught that by his example. In everything he did, he was always conscious of who he was doing for. And therefore, as he testified himself, the success is in the consciousness. The real result is in the consciousness. How much, just as Krishna says, and all activities just depend upon me, work always under my protection. In such devotional service, you should be conscious of me. If you're conscious of me, you'll cross over all the obstacles of conditional life by my grace. But if you do not work in that consciousness and act through false ego, not hearing me, you'll be lost. It's in the consciousness. After all, that's what Srila Prabhupada came to teach. He came to teach us how to be Krishna conscious. And the best way to be Krishna conscious is to be conscious of who we're serving in everything that we do. And to be conscious that we're serving in subordination to this higher order that's been given to me to serve. It's a lesson I learned when Srila Prabhupada didn't come to Boston. And I continued to learn after Srila Prabhupada's departure. And although it's been 40 years since he departed, and Prabhupada physically didn't come and see those rooms, Prabhupada, in many respects, many of the things that services I was given the opportunity to render for him since that time, I can only hope that someday in my heart, he will reveal that he's accepted these things But I'm going to go on and consciously serve him in a way that would be pleasing to him, in a way that he would want me to serve. And that's my hope. I share that as a message, that all of you have the same opportunity to serve Srila Prabhupada, to assist him in spreading Krishna consciousness by serving your spiritual master, who is also dedicated in service to Srila Prabhupada. And my humble request is that as much as you possibly can, remember who is the object of that service and be successful and be happy in service to the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada. This will give our movement a very great opportunity to be successful for many generations to come if Srila Prabhupada's followers can teach in the way that Srila Prabhupada taught us. So I thank you for your attention and for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you very much. Srila Niranjan Swami Maharaj.